Okay, good morning. We're going to continue. We had a two-week recess, but we're going to continue. We're going to talk about another idea related to the Parsha. Here. Another idea related to the Parsha, a different person that perhaps we've not seen before. So let's read a little bit, and we'll introduce who the source of the week is. So after working for Laban for 20 years, so Yaakov decides to move, and it's time to leave and leave his father-in-law's house. So the account of the decision, the account of the entire discussion here, the account of the entire discussion is laid out in the Sukkim of the Torah. Can we get the door in the back over there? So the account of the Torah is laid out over here. Let's read through and let's understand how Yaakov came to a decision in order to leave the house of Laban. Vayomer Hashem el Yaakov, and Hashem said to Yaakov, Shuv el eretz avosecha umeladetcha v'yeh imach. Return to the land of your fathers and your place of your birth, and I will be with you. Vayishlach Yaakov, and Yaakov sent. Vayikra l'rachel v'leah, and he called for Rachel and Leah. Hasadeh el tzono, and he called them out to the field by his sheep. Why did he call them out to the field? Because he did not want to have this very sensitive conversation in front of anybody else. Vayomer lahen, and he said to them, Ro'eh anochi es pnei avichen, I have seen the face of your father. Ke'einenu elai kismo shel shom, because it is not with me as it was in the past. Ve'lokei avi yaya imadi, where the God of our fathers is with me. Ve'etznei yada'atam ki b'chol kochi avadati es avichen, and you need to know that with all of my strength I served your father. Ve'avichen haselbi ve'chalefis maskorti eseres monim, ve'lo nosnu elohim lahira imadi. And your father-in-law was a terrible, terrible trickster. He changed my price and tried to take advantage of us and do all types of terrible things. But the God of my fathers was with me, and he did not allow him to harm me. And he finishes his speech. And he goes on to talk about all the terrible things that Laban did to him and his family. Vayomer Eli Malach Elokim. And an angel of God came to me b'chalom, in a dream. And he said, Yaakov, Vayomer Hineni. And I said to him, here I am. Vayomer, and the angel repeated the following message. Anochi Akel Beisel, I am the God you saw in Beiskel, Asher Mishchata Sham Matseva Asher Nandarti Lo Sham, and there you anointed that rock on the Mount of Har Moriah as a neder, as an oath, Ata Kum now, Tsei Min Aretz, leave the land, Hazos, Veshuvel Eretz Malatzcha, and get up and go back to the home, the place of your family. The main motive for Yaakov Avinu leaving was what? Why did he leave the house of his father-in-law? Why?
Because he was a bad influence on
him. Is that the main motive? The main motive, he says to his wives, is that his father-in-law, Laban, was a miserable, insecure, petty, selfish, narcissistic, egotistical sociopath who was making his life miserable. That is what he told his wife. Only at the end of his speech, what does he say? Oh, and by the way, guys, Hashem also told me I should leave. It's a very funny way to express something that happened, right? The Ratzon Hashem, fulfilling the Ratzon Hashem is the goal of every tzaddik, is the goal of every righteous person. And here in the Torah, Yaakov does something very funny. He paints this whole picture. Your father-in-law is miserable, and it's terrible here, and he's bad for the children, and they have too much TV time, or whatever the issue was in the house of his father-in-law. And then now he's like, oh, and by the way, it totally slipped my mind. God came to me and told me to leave the place of our place where we're living. If Hashem came to you in Nevuah, you know, today, and he told you, you know, really, I really think you should go to Florida for Shabbos. So, you know, next week for Shabbos. And you go to your parents and say, you know, Mom and Dad, it's very cold over here. And, you know, it's much better weather in Florida. And I have friends in Florida, and there's a wedding I need to go to, and on and on. Oh, and by the way, I totally forgot to tell you. And God came to me in a dream, and he told me that I should go to Florida. Why would you save that for the end of the discussion? But that's what Yaakov does. In this very interesting, weird conversation, he ends the conversation by saying, oh, and I have to the rest of Hashem, and he comes with all these excuses at the beginning. And then, look how Leah and Rachel reply to Yaakov. Look at the reply over here. Vatan Rachel v'Leah. And Rachel and Leah answered, Vatomarna lo ha'od lanu chelek v'nachal beis avinu. We have nothing to do with our father anymore. He's obviously corrupt. He doesn't treat us like his children. We're not supposed to be here. Halo nachrios nachshavnu lo. We are strangers to him. Ki macharnu v'yochel gam achol es kaspenu. He's consumed all of our money, everything we have. We don't want to be here as well. Ki kol maase, ki kol haoser asher, osher asher hitze elokim me'avinu, lanu hu levanenu. Everything our father has, he's stolen from us and our children. Biata, and now, kol asher elokim me'elech hased. Oh, and by the way, also, you're right, we should probably listen to what God says. It is the strangest conversation. Nobody seems to be, you know, saying the right things here. Yaakov is saying ridiculous things and saying, oh, like, I don't like here, and by the way, Hashem told me I have to leave. And they respond, oh, you're right, it is very terrible. Oh, and you're right as well, God did tell you to leave, so we should probably go. What an odd conversation that's going on over here between Yaakov and Rachel. They base their entire consent on the side issue and don't focus on the Ratzon Hashem. Everyone hears the question? We're sensitive to the issue here? I want to share with you today the works of Rabbi Mordechai Miller. Rabbi Mordechai Miller was the head of the Gateshead Seminary in Gateshead, the famous Gateshead Seminary. He was a Talmud of Rav Dessler, and Rav Dessler picked him to be the head of the seminary when the seminary opened up. Rabbi Mordechai Miller was a fantastic mechanech, a brilliant educator, and turned the seminary in Gateshead into this institution that it became, that is respected throughout the world. Rabbi Miller would give a number of shirim throughout the week in the seminary on the Parsha. And they were titled, in its, you know, beautiful English, the Sabbath Shiurim. These Sabbath Shiurim were eventually collected and put into a number of volumes. I think there's volumes 1, 2, and 3. This is my copy of volume 1. It looks old, because it is. And it's a beautiful volume, beautiful English, and he brings out major yesodos in Amunah and Hashkafa, foundational ideas that every Jew should be familiar with. And he takes from either Rav Dessler, other Bali Musar, you know, masters of Hasidus, and he takes these ideas that can sometimes be very extract ideas, and he makes them incredibly practical and user-friendly. Now, I'm pretty sure that Feldheim has republished all of them in new volumes. I'm pretty sure they're all available for anyone who's interested in more. I think this is one of my favorite pieces in the whole series. This is one of my favorite pieces, and I want to share with you what Rabbi Miller says. Now, also a beautiful part of the Sabbath Shiurim is that Rabbi Miller will tell you things that he heard from Rav Dessler that you cannot find in Michtav Melio and other places. So it's also another avenue into Rav Dessler's thought. Or he'll expand an idea in the Michtav Melio and give it a different twist, a different perspective from his own perch where he sat as a Talmud of Rav Dessler. Let's read what he says over here. This is in Sabbath Shiurim in Volume 1. He says, Rabbi Dessler explains that in fact that it was of course and only the will of God that determined their decision, and no other consideration would have affected. If you want to in your head, you can read it with a British accent and it will probably sound more exciting. It was, however, a kind of moral modesty and integrity that caused them to state clearly their secondary motives for leaving. The insecurity and unease of life with Lavan, to acknowledge the human element in their decision. Since this element was present, they wish not to seem to hide it, not to pretend to live on a completely superhuman level. It is this perfect scrupulousness that is demanded of man, so that he will see clearly what stage of his moral progress he has reached, and not assume his motives to be purer than in fact they are. Tznius is something we talk about in all different types of facets. Says Rav Dessler, and we'll develop this soon, the reason why Yaakov and Rachel and Leah spoke in this way is because they wanted to be honest in their Yerushalayim. They did not want to show themselves to be frummer than they actually were and where they were holding. They did not want to say, ah, Baruch Hashem, your father-in-law is amazing. It's so wonderful here. He gives us so much. Chasdei Hashem, thank you Hashem for everything we have. But also Hashem told me to leave. When deep down inside they were feeling, oh my gosh, I hate it here. Every single second here is a living Gehenna. I need to leave this place. Because doing so, says Rav Dessler, is a false form of frumkeit. It is pretending that one has Yirah Shemayim. It is pretending that one is in a higher level when in fact they don't feel that way. And it's a very important midah, a very important lesson that all of us need to work on. Certainly, when someone has come back from, you know, the heights of Eretz Yisrael, come from spiritual growth and developing themselves, a person needs to check themselves to make sure, are they being honest in the way they portray themselves and how they feel. The Malbim writes at the end of Eov that one of the worst things that Eov's friends did vis-a-vis Eov is that they pretended to be firmer than they were. The beauty in Eov's answers, says the Malbim to his friends, is that Eov spoke emistic. He said the truth. He said, this is hard. This is difficult. I don't feel like Baruch Hashem-ing my way out of the situation. I feel challenged. And they spoke in an honest way. Yaakov and Rachel and Leah all said to themselves, I know we're supposed to do the Rasan Hashem. I know we're supposed to do the right thing. But I really hate it here. And it's terrible. And I don't want to pretend to say, the reason I'm leaving is because I had a nevuah. The reason I want to leave is because your father-in-law is miserable. And it's terrible in this location. Tznius is something that we discuss when it comes to dress. And it's something we discuss when it comes to behavior. And it's also something we think about when it comes to speech. For example, the Yalkut Shimoni says that for tznius shown by Rachel in this week's Parsha, that she was modest in quietly giving the simanim over to her sister, the Medrash says she merited to have a great-great-grandson who was incredibly modest. That was Shaul HaMelech. Shaul, in turn, when the kingship was offered to him and he was anointed as the king, Shaul was very quiet. He did not go and tell his parents. He did not go on Twitter. He did not go on Instagram. He did not go on WhatsApp to tell anyone, hey guys, just became king, emoji like crown. That's not what he did. He kept it to himself. He was very quiet. He was very tsanua. And in the zechus of Shaul HaMelech, being tsanua and being quiet, he merited to have a great-great-granddaughter who was also very tsanua. And his great-great-granddaughter was Esther HaMalka. The Esther Lomagedes Es Molarata. Esther did not reveal where she came from. She was tsanua in her speech and her actions. Tznius is more than just length of skirt and how something fits. Tznius is about a total personality in how we present ourselves in a modest, unassuming way, trying to not draw attention to ourselves. The Radak writes on the famous pasuk of V'hatznei leches im Elokecha. The Radak writes on the pasuk in Micha. V'razal perish ki asos mishpat elu hadinim. The Chazal explained to do mishpat are the laws of and loving chesed are the laws of chesed, gmilas chesedim. V'hatznei leches and to be tsanua im Elokecha, zehotsas hameis v'achnasas kala. This is the mitzvah of taking care of the burial, of making sure a kala has a chuppah to go to. Hare dvarim kal v'chomer. The matter is a kal v'chomer. Umad dvarim she'en darchan la'asosim b'tzina. The matters, which they are not normally done quietly. Funerals are not quiet events. Weddings are not quiet events. But we are told to try to help people in those situations in the most sanua fashion possible. Amra toa batznei leches dvarim she'darchan la'asosim b'tzina. Alachas kama v'kama. Matters that are meant to be held private, how much more so you need to keep them to yourself, not to share them with anybody else. No one needs to know about your personal avodas Hashem. No one needs to know about your davening. No one needs to know about your learning. No one needs to know about the chesed you're doing. That's between you and only one other thing, and that is Hashem. Tznius in Yerushalayim is the lesson that Roy Dessler wants to draw upon. The idea of not publicizing your Shemayim and your Frumkeit is spelled out by the Altar of Kelm. The Altar of Kelm writes in the Chachma Musar Chelek Beis. Listen to what he writes beautifully. He says, Beyur Hadavar, the meaning of the matter is, Ki kli yakar ma'od, ein l'shtamesh bo harbei, rak l'prakim mu'atim, shelo yiskakel. If you have a very precious item, you do not take it out and use it all the time. A shochet who has a shechita knife does not take it out to slice up the chicken for his son for dinner. It's a very precious, rare, valuable item. You use it only when necessary. If you have a precious gem, if you have a diamond, you don't show it off whenever you want. You bring it out for special occasions. Your Yiras Shemayim, says the Altar of Kelm, is a very precious tool. And it must be held close and only exposed in dire circumstances. B'chein bazeh, frumkeit, perush, yira, yiras Hashem, frumkeit equals, says the Altar of Kelm, your yiras Hashem, hu inyan yakarmo, it is a very valuable, precious thing. V'ein l'shtamesh ba b'makom sh'el shablo zeh. And if I don't have to expose my frumkeit to anybody, and I can come up with another excuse about why I'm doing something, or why I'm going here, or why I'm helping this person, then better to put that forward instead of talking about my inner avoda. Yeah.
I was just curious about what you said about the diamond. I feel like it's a thing in in the Jewish community, not in general, to have a diamond ring.
That's true.
So flashy.
Fun thing. It's not a thing in Yiddishkeit to have a diamond ring.
No, but I'm saying, like,
we definitely picked that up from the Goyim. That's 100% true. It's fine. A person wants to wear a diamond ring, a person wants to wear a nice shuli, that's okay. But if a person has something that's very precious to them, we don't bring it out whenever we want. Many women have jewelry that's only for special occasions. Earrings we wear at a wedding. You know, a necklace we wear at a special event. There are certain things that we don't wear all the time, because it's very, very precious to us. I'm not saying the engagement ring is not precious. The engagement, the design is that a person wears it, that people know they're engaged, for whatever reason. But when it comes to something that's very precious and meaningful to us, we don't expose it to everybody. We don't show it off to the entire world. We bring it out at very rare occasions and very specific times. And that's how we should treat our frumkeit, says Rav Dessler, says the Altar of Kelm. Let's see how Rabbi Miller elaborates more on this idea. Similarly, in the higher reaches of devotion and perfection, the fear of God is a very precious thing and should not be called upon at every trifling opportunity. Where possible, one should try to act and speak in a straightforward way without drawing on this precious reserve of holiness, and certainly not to display it before the eyes of others, leading them to an exaggerated opinion of one's moral stature, that they will think that perhaps you are frummer than you are. It is an essential condition for the preservation of this holiness that it be cherished in quietness and seclusion, not exploited or brandished. It is an inner wealth that is only damaged by being exposed to the externals of speech and action. These highest motives are to be used with discrimination and only on occasion worthy of their special quality. We live in a time where everything must come through a public display of something. It is a very hard thing to work on, that when you have some sort of religious experience, to not take a picture of it and show it to other people, to not make a recording and then to send it out to people know how from you are, to put it on social media. There is a very big difference, because we'll tell ourselves with the Valiant Yitzhara, you know, there's so much terrible things on social media. Better I should fill it with holy things than other Narshkat that's there. Why do you have to be the one to do that? Why do you have to be the one to go save the world? Your Yir Shamayim does not have to be exposed for the sake of, you know, inspiring other people. If someone goes out of the way and they want to expose your Yir Shamayim, someone takes a picture of you doing something, someone tells a story about you, well then, I guess if you can keep it back and be tzanua and don't let it get out, that's fine. But a person should go and actively display to the world and write and speak and take pictures of their personal avoda, of what they're doing, and then broadcast the entire world about this is what I'm doing, this is my religious experiences. It's a total violation of tznius, says Rav Dessler and says Rav Miller. It's not the way things are supposed to be. Yeah.
Why?
Good. So why is it mutter to make a siyum? It's mutter to make a siyum because it's a sudas mitzvah. We are celebrating the Torah. Of course a person is going to make a siyum and they're going to obviously have to mention the fact that they finished a Masechta, Shas, whatever it may be. If they think that it is done in a way to, you know, promote other people, it will get other people to learn as well. We have people in the community who make siyumim, and they do it not for themselves, because they want to inspire other people to do it. The goal of the Siyum HaShas, you know, in MetLife Stadium, yes, in some regard, it is to celebrate those people who learned, but it's also, hopefully, to get people to sign up for the next one, and get people learning as well. So again, a person needs to be honest and balanced. Am I celebrating myself, or am I celebrating the Torah that's being learnt? And it depends how a person talks. There's a way to do everything in life, in a way that's sanua and a way that's not sanua. So each person needs to know. I know of Rabbanim, very chashuv Rabbanim, who make siyumim all the time. They finish Masechta Sefer Masechta, and they make a siyum with their family by the Shabbos meal. No one knows. No Kaddish. No singing and dancing. Their children should know that their father's learning and their father in Sora. They make siyumim all the time. They do it for their families. Their children should know and to be mechanech their children. But not that it becomes a whole display of their own knowledge and how from they are. We see then, says Roy Miller, that even in matters of devotion to God, a certain reticence is desired, a guarding of inner purity from exposure, and from the constant danger of being overgrown by the mere appearance of piety. This would lead to a refined form of deception in the very acts that are meant to express an overwhelming inner dedication. This was the motive of Yaakov and his wives. They hesitated to display, even in the subtle way, their utter submission to the will of God. They were so fearful to maybe, perhaps on a chance, do something that looked firmer than they were holding. And keep in mind, it was just the three of them. No one else was to know about this conversation. And yet they were so careful. Any shadow of a secondary consideration would have rendered such a display a deception. Rather than that, they spoke in the normal language of men, with seemingly men's normal motivations, their feelings of insecurity and estrangement from Lavan. But in reality, sov ma'aseh b'machshava techila, the last mentioned element in their decision was the first of importance, the sheer unquestioned will of God. They threw it at the end, but we all have to understand that's where it was coming from. But they held that secret towards the end because they were so fearful of putting their frumkeit and their religious expression on display. Here, let's give another example and see how Yaakov was careful about this as well. At the end of Yaakov's story, when there's a famine and Yosef had been sold to Mitzrayim, Yaakov has the following conversation with his sons. Yaakov is speaking to his sons about the famine in Canaan, and he says, Lama Sisrao, he said to them, why should we be Sisrao? There's a major machlokas in the Mefarshim, what the word Sisrao means when he's talking to his sons. So Rashi says, why should we show off? What were they showing off about? That they should go down to Egypt and buy food. There was a great gadol and a great Talmud Chacham before the Holocaust. His name was Rav Shlomo Zalman Ehrenreich. He was a Hungarian Rav. So he writes in the Evan Shlomo, he was a tremendous darshan, just a real Talmud Chacham and pulling out messages from the Torah. So he says in his Evan Shlomo that the Ramban questions Avram for leaving Eretz Yisrael to go on down to Mitzrayim. Right? We know that the Ramban says, how did Avram have such a lack of emunah on his level to go down to Egypt during the famine? Right? He should have trusted in Hashem. So really, the Shvatim said, well, our Zaydi got in trouble. Avram got in trouble for going to Mitzrayim. That's why Sarah was taken away from him, because he lacked emunah bitachon. So the Shvatim said to Yaakov, Dad, we're not going down to Egypt. We're going to have bitachon. Hashem's going to provide for us in the famine in Canaan. But Yaakov told the Shvatim, no, we have a very important lesson here. When it comes to Yirah Shemayim, a person has to try to conceal his actions and his levels from others. We never want to expose our avoda to other people. Uma Hashem Elokecha Dorish Mimach. Vatznei Lecha, says Yaakov to his children, to be Tzanua. And if Hashem would have sustained the family of Yaakov in Canaan, while everybody else had a famine, what would that have shown? What would that have exposed? Their Yirah Shemayim, they would expose their frumkeit, their bitachon, their emunah. It would have been on display to the entire world. And therefore, he told them, go down to Mitzrayim. Lama Sisro. Why should we show off our Yirah Hashem? We need to go along with the facade that we're going to put in our hishtadlus, we're going to go get food, so that the level of kedusha of this family is not shown off to the entire world. Lama Sisro, le'enei kol. Why should we show off in front of everybody? And that's why Yaakov, so sensitive already from his young marriage to speak with his wives and how he escaped the house of his father-in-law, was also sensitive with his children later on to make sure that we don't expose our Yirah Shemayim and we go along with everybody else and we keep our inner avoda to ourselves. In davening, yeah.
So how do you keep that balance of, like, yes, like putting yourself out there, like inspiring others, also like knowing the ins and outs of the world, but also keeping...
Okay, good. So I'll tell you an idea that my Rebbe, Rabbi Shechter, likes to talk about when it comes to the idea of tznius. Whenever he talks about tznius, he doesn't talk about clothing or things like that. He begins with an idea that Rabbi Soloveitchik would often talk about, that everything we do in this world is patterned after a Kaddish Baruch Hu. There's a mitzvah in the Torah of v'halachta b'drachim, to walk in the ways of Hashem. So we look into the Torah to find how we should act. The Navi Yeshayahu says that Hashem is a kel mistater, a hidden God. Meaning, nature runs beautifully on its own, right? Hashem does a really good job of hiding himself in the world, sometimes too good. And he hides himself. And we go outside and we see the leaves changing, we see the beautiful weather, and we feel, what a beautiful world that we have. And most people don't recognize that Hashem is hiding behind all of that. Hashem purposely hides himself in the world. Because if he did not hide himself in the world, there would be no free choice. There would be no bechira. But halachta b'drachah means we need to mimic Hashem. Sometimes Hashem, though, does split a sea. Sometimes Hashem does let a 747, land in the Hudson River totally unscathed and everybody survives. Sometimes there are open miracles that Hashem says, I just want to let everybody know, I'm still here, just saying hello, just want to run the show and let you know I'm in charge and I'm going to go back to being hiding. Sometimes a person in life does need to expose his Yiras Hashem. When does a person do that, says Rav Schechter? When you feel there's no choice. When nobody else is getting up to do it, there's a great lack and nothing is filling this void. Or someone comes to you and says, I need you. You are a person who needs to step up and to help out over here. That's when a person is supposed to do it, when there's no other choice. Sometimes we'll have in shul, a man thinks that he is God's gift to Chazanus. And he needs to daven all the time, and he needs to be the Chazan all the time, and he needs to show off his voice all the time. The halacha says the opposite. The halacha is that a person may not go up to daven, to be the Chazan, until you are requested by the tzibur, until the gabe comes over to you. Or, davening is late. Davening is supposed to start at 4:05. It's now 4:10, no one up. Okay, but makom she'nish, when nobody else is there. So you step and you do what you have to do. But a person should only expose themselves when they are told that there's no choice and we need you to go do something. Or they see that there's something going on, there's a problem, and you have to step in. But the default setting should always be, I don't need to be the one to do it. I can keep it to myself, work on myself personally, and when someone tells me, and someone taps me on the shoulder and says, know what? It's time for you to go in. I see you have kochos, I see that you have something you need to offer, it's time for you to step up, then you'll do it. But unless someone has told you, or you feel there's something lacking, then there's no reason to go in to pursue that thing. That's the balance. Does that make sense? Okay. Fine. We say in our davening, we say in by Shochenad on Shabbos, Befi Yisharim, right? Uvesifsei Tzadikim, Ubilshon Chasidim, Ubekerev Kedoshim. Right? Let's go through those three stages. It goes in order of greatness. A Yasher is a person who serves Hashem and does exactly what he's supposed to do, which is not a small level. Halavai, we should all be Yisharim. He does exactly what he's supposed to do. What does it say? Befi Yisharim. He speaks openly. He talks about his Yashrus. Ubesifsei Tzadikim. A tzaddik moves his sfasayim, but you can't hear it. When you move your lips, it means I see the lips moving, but I don't hear anything coming out. A lower level of exposure. The next level is the chassid. The chassid is a person who goes way, way beyond what he's supposed to do. Because the lashon, uvil shon chassidim, where's your lashon? It's inside the mouth. No one can see, hopefully see your tongue, right? So you have like a tongue ring and then people see when you're talking, it's disgusting. But a person should keep their tongue inside their mouth, right? And therefore, it's barely noticed when the tongue is moving. But the highest level, who is bekerev kedoshim, the kadosh is the highest because his avoda is bekerev. It's inside. No one notices it. Nobody sees it. It's personal to himself. They say that the Gemara says in Sukkah that Hillel had a number of very chashuv tzadikim, and they said about the greatest of them was Rav Yonasan ben Uziel. Rav Yonasan ben Uziel, Amuka in Eretz Yisrael, that he was such a great tzaddik, and people would fly over him, so that the birds would fly over him, the birds would burn up from the intensity of the fire that was above his head. Okay? So they asked, what about the other tzaddikim? What about them? What about Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? What about those people? So they explained that the greatness of those Talmidim is that they also had an intensity, but you couldn't see it. They also had a fire inside of them, but it was to themselves. It wasn't for anybody else to see. And that was a very significant level. I just want to tell a story, and then we'll. What? That they kept him inside. Yeah. His greatness was in Torah knowledge. His power of Torah knowledge was greater than everybody else. But Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai became the Gadol Hador. He kept his intensity inside. Okay? Let's tell a story about the Rebbe Rav Shlomo of Radomsk, the Radomsk Rav. So when his daughter, when there was a chassid who came to the Rebbe of Radomsk when his daughter was of marriageable age, and he didn't know where to begin to find all the money needed for the dowry and for the wedding, and all this was written out on the kvittel that he wrote to his Rebbe. So Rav Shlomo of Radomsk read the kvittel, and he said, what's this I read here about you being such a poor person? He said, you better leave my house right now. because Chazal tells us that a poor person, as we know from Yaakov in this week's Parsha, is Chashav Kemes. He doesn't have any money. He's considered like a dead person. And I'm a Kohen, so you should get out of my house. So he made a joke. So everybody started laughing there. And the man ran out of the house in fright. Oh my gosh, he told me to get out. So he called me and said, no, come back right now. Don't worry about it. Obviously, you're a Mace Mitzvah. You're a person who needs, you're in dire need if you're coming here. So since you're a Mace Mitzvah, a Kohen is allowed to go and bury a Mace Mitzvah, a dead body, that no one's taking care of. So I'm going to go and help you. I'm the Kohen. And he made a joke. You should come back inside and I'll take care of you. Everyone started laughing, making jokes. Rosh Hashanah Damsk had such a good sense of humor. So he said, you're worrying about marrying off your daughter? Do you have any bread to eat? So the guy said, I don't have any bread to eat. But you say hamotzi over bread every day, don't you? So where are you going to get the bread for that? So he said, most of the bread that we have comes from my wife, and she works and earns a little bit. So we said, what a chashuv business you had. The wife supports him, but we were warned by this example, right? Adam was given food by his wife Chava. And how did that turn out? So he said, it's not such a good situation for you. He said, tell me, what way does your wife earn her income? So she goes all over the courtyards, the chaseros of the different neighborhoods, and she sells vegetables and whatever, and she earns a little bit from that, said the poor man. So Rosh Shlomo Rav Adam said to him, we have a pasuk in the Torah. It says, v'chaseros di zahav, that the Jewish people traveled from chaseros, then they went to the place of di zahav. So, meaning, if she goes to the chaseros, she goes to the courtyards of the wealthy people, she will have di zahav, literally, enough gold. So go home in peace, the Hashem will bless you, and you'll have enough gold to support yourself. And he's making all these jokes, all these plays on words, and he's being very funny. So when he comes home, his wife asks him if he brought anything back from the Rebbe, and he didn't know what to say. So after some time, the next day, the wife came home with a package, and she said, look here, I found this package lying in the mud, and I picked it up. And they opened it, and inside they found hundreds of rubles, enough to put away for the wedding, enough to put away to start a small business, and the man was successful for the rest of his life. So after Shlomo Rav Adamsk passed away, this chassid came to visit his son, the next Rebbe, Rav Avram Yisachar. And he told him about the episode with his father and the bracha, and he was making all these jokes and puns and plays on words. He was being so silly. So the son said, my father was a remarkable man. Every expression of his supernatural powers and his Ruach HaKodesh, he managed to clothe in jests and puns so that no one should detect that there was anything extraordinary about him. That the Rebbe said, he made all these jokes, acted so silly, he put on a show because he didn't want to expose his Yiras Shamayim. He didn't want to talk in these lofty ways. And he made it seem in a way that it was hidden and it was just part of the way he was communicating and the jokes and the witticisms and all the puns were just part of the way he was. Let's come now to the conclusion over here. Rabbi Miller concludes and he says, to the general principle that emerges is that in a large degree, the external is the enemy of the internal. Any virtue won through diligent, self-denying effort, meaning anything you accomplish in life because you worked on yourself, faces its greatest danger when it is displayed to the public gaze, the danger of pride that vitiates every spiritual gain, wipes it out. Even the virtue of humility, ironically enough, is not immune from this fatal self-consciousness. It is even possible to be proud of one's humility, right? He's a big anav. He's very proud that he's a big honor. Many people notice him. People pay attention to his humility. Person walks in a very meek way, and he knows that people are looking, and they talk about his humility. In guarding against even the slightest taint of this most harmful vices, the precautions of modesty have a highly practical value. This is what God seeks from us, to do justice, love kindness, and in all things, walk modestly with our God. Yeah.
Is the goal not to have...
Well, that's always. First, you should not have... There's a difference between having self-esteem and having haughtiness. Haughtiness is a person feels that he is entitled to the gaze and the praise of everybody else around him, and that he is better than everybody else. Anava says that a person understands that everything is from Hashem, and that everyone around him has a quality that he doesn't have, and everyone around him has something special, and that he's not necessarily God's gift to humanity in every single facet. A person should not be a shmata, and a person should have self-esteem and know what qualities they have. We don't think Moshe Rabbeinu, who was anav mikol adam, knew that he spoke to Hashem pe'al pe' every single day? Of course he knew that. But he also looked around and said, everybody in Klal Yisrael has something I don't have. So we're not saying to be a shmata, but a person needs to also be aware to not feel prideful about whatever sense of humility that they have. Okay? We'll stop here.